no crying in baseball!
You're 5 feet nothing. 100 and nothing. And you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years.
See, fuck you, Joe. I do it myself.
In here, there were two guys killing each other. But I guess that's better than 20 million. But what I'm trying to say is that if I can change, and you can change, everybody can change.
Welcome to Montucky Sky Super Bowl Edition. I'm Biggs.
I'm Brennan.
And I'm Super Bowl 49 champion Tom Brady, and I'm just here so I don't get fined.
I was actually wondering if we were going to have the weird tradition continue from the last 3 years where one of us had us came on the show having lost a Super Bowl.
Combo breaker.
Yeah. So it didn't quite work out. So let's just get it out on top of the show. We have an old tradition. Whenever our team advances a round, we get to brag for 2 minutes. So go ahead.
I'm so goddamn happy. I really am. I'm the happiest man in the land. You know why? Because every Sunday, I get to watch Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman and Brandon LaFell and Danny Amendola and Brian Stork and Ryan Wendell. And I get to watch Vince Wilfork. I get to watch Darrell Revis, Brandon Browner, Kyle Arrington. I get to see Nate Ebner. I get to see Matt Slater. I get to see Steven Gostkowski and more. God damn, it feels good to be a Pats fan. And god damn, does it feel good to see the Lombardi Trophy back where it belongs in New England. Foxborough for fucking ever. And I just like to say, when you get a battle of the two most hateable teams in the league, only one can be the true champion. And I have to say, I feel like Ivan Drago, I feel like the Soviet hockey team from Miracle. God damn it, I'm Team Iceland, and it feels fucking good. You know why? Because evil brings home rings.
There is so much factually inaccurate of what you just said.
Oh, so much. Just pure rage and cocky bullshit.
But I'm going to let it go because it's the 2 minute
warning. That's right.
You get to say whatever you want.
You can be as lunatic. You can be as manic and as much a lunatic as you please.
The one thing I won't let it go is you said coming back to New England as if there's like one Lombardi trophy
that I know. You gotta remember, I'm a hockey fan. I'm used to the Stanley Cup.
It's like the only sport that does that.
I know. And hey, it's also, and this is something I have a bone to pick with football, basketball, and baseball. The hockey's the only sport where they give the championship trophy to the players and not the rich old white dude who cuts their paychecks.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
That is true.
Although, watching the presentation of the trophy, everybody in the stadium touched the
that thing.
Before
I know
Robert Kraft did.
My Aunt Bertha touched that thing.
Wait, what do you mean?
It was
that?
Like the longest walk. I swear they like walked from LA. Like, yeah. Everybody along the way is like, stop, gave it a kiss.
It was like the Olympic torch relay. Just every motherfucker in that building touched it.
I'm just happy because I know Seattle fans are crying right now, and they're going to be so salty.
Oh, yeah.
That's where my solace is in this. So.
Just pillars of salt. Tom Brady did this for you, Brandon. He got the revenge for you.
Me and a Mr. Aaron Donaldson have been sending, we've been arguing about a lot of shit lately, and it's always fun to argue with Aaron, but like, I sent him a picture of a redneck poking a bear because I've totally been poking the bear with him lately. Just every time, which he does this, he sends out things with like vague things that he knows will start an argument because he likes to argue. Uh-huh. But I've been poking the bear just when it seems like the argument's settled. That's when I jump in the middle of the thread and steadily start something. I'm going to hand that, like, that I'm going to take from Aaron. I'm going to stop poking Aaron's bear, and tomorrow's going to be glorious.
You're going to have so many bears to poke.
I am going to, like, actively seek out my Seattle friends on Facebook and just wait for, like, because you know there's going to be grumpy things. Oh, we were robbed on this. We were robbed on that. Deflategate, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to love it, dude. It's going to be so much fun.
Oh, it's going to be
as
beautiful.
Much as I hate the Patriots, they gave me a gift today.
That's right. It's sort of like the getting a gift from the mob don on his daughter's wedding day, right? Like, like, you may hate his guts and he may be bad for your neighborhood and community, but goddamn it, you take advantage when he wants to hand out the prizes.
When he's doing the parade, the neighborhood blog party, that's where he's right. Like handing out freaking keys to,
yeah, you can hate Camaro. Him on a personal level. You show up to that party.
You show up and you practice the Omerta.
That's right. You pay homage.
That's right. Well, that's not Omerta.
No, you know I'm what running
Omerta
with
is, or.
But I'm also like 14 beers in.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I can spell Omerta right now.
So Omerta is basically O-M-E-R-T-A.
Yeah. Yeah. I can spell Omerta.
Yeah, okay. It's basically you're silent or else. Like, it's a code of silence in the mob. I know this because Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather, wrote a book called Omerta. I couldn't get through it, but...
Yeah, it's worth noting
for
the listeners.
I'm sure it was good.
I've been drinking since about 2 o'clock today. Just nonstop.
Yeah, I had to work and Brandon just kicked me a beer because I didn't have time to go buy beers. And god damn, that hit the spot. You hit like a beer that I actually like too. It's a cheaper like Montana beer, but it's a pretty good IPA. Going to the Sun IPA.
You know,
I buy it a lot. Actually.
I won't really take credit for that. My brother came over and brought a couple six packs, and these two beers represent what's left of it.
Well, friend to the show, Brent Beardsley. Thank you.
Shout out to you, Brent.
Not just friend of the show because he brought me a beer, because I think he's been on it.
He has been on
a couple of times. So, I mean, I know he's been on it. I just think it's a couple of times.
It's been a few times.
Yeah.
I can think of at least two off the top
of
my head.
He came in lieu of you.
Exactly. And he came in with me once.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Glad we worked that out.
Should we talk a little Oscar stuff? I watched some movies. I could only remember three of them. I think there's a fourth, but I'm not 100% positive. I know last week when I said I thought there was a fourth, I realized it was Foxcatcher.
Uh-huh.
And I just said we're going to cover it on the Thin Mens,
right,
which we did.
Yeah, it happened.
So, yeah.
Available on iTunes and at thinmen.blogspot.com.
For free. You have no excuse to not download
it. Come on, America.
Okay, I'm gonna throw out a little piece of advice really quick, because I had this beer, it hit me pretty quick. I'm gonna talk a little shit. Okay, anybody who's listening to shit on their phone or on their computer and doesn't know how to download it, I'm gonna tell you the app you can use right now that's really easy. I got this for my Straight Talk phone, but it'll work for pretty much any phone. And it works really well. It downloads the shit like anytime you're in wireless for your subscription stuff. It is a app called Podcast Republic.
There you go.
Download Podcast Republic. It'll just make it easier.
And I use PodCruncher if anybody wants another alternative.
So there you go. You got multiple options. Mm-hmm. This was the first free one I saw. It turned out to be better than the iTunes thing I saw. But... totally need iTunes because it goes through the iTunes directory. So.
I can't remember if Pod Cruncher is free or not, because I'd have to go back and figure out whether I was drunk or not when I downloaded it. If I was sober, it's free. If I was drunk, it's not free.
Yeah, because that's where you're just like, fuck it, I need this app.
I got $4.
Yeah. Well, this app does everything you want it to do, I think, in a podcast catcher. So. Yeah, it's pretty badass. But anyway.
Back to movies.
So which movie you want to hear about first? I watched Ida.
Ida. Oh, let's talk about Ida. Okay. I got mad love for Ida. We had it at the Myrna.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Fuck yeah.
Well, why don't you bring it up? What's it about, Zach?
Ida is about a novitiate named Ida, obviously, who is a...
A what?
A novitiate.
I'm not smart enough to know what that is.
A novitiate is a nun in training,
okay,
essentially.
I knew that.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you're going to meant like a quiet Polish lady.
That too.
I was just making sure.
Yep.
Just making sure.
Yeah, she, Ida, played by Agata Trzebikowska, which
Jesus,
I'm
dude,
so
you're
proud.
Right on this.
Yeah.
I'm
on the ball with this.
How are you on this after 15 beers?
Because I got mad love for Ida. It's directed by...
I'm going to be honest, dude. I watched it and I got 35 minutes through and I was like, oh shit, what am I watching this for? And I'm like, the cinematography is pretty good. Is that what I'm watching it for? And I looked up and it's up for cinematography and foreign
and
language,
like,
film.
That's what I'm watching
which
it
was
for.
Why I was like, I don't even need to bother remembering the actress's name.
And I got it on Lock. It's directed by a Polish director who was actually known more for his documentaries, but has since transitioned into feature work, named Paweł Pawlikowski. And the thing that really sticks with me is almost every frame in this movie could be like a piece of art. Like every shadow's on purpose. Every bit of light's on purpose. It's always framed. There's a, did you notice that there's a lot more head space than most movies? Like, there's a lot of room above the heads in the shots.
Well, I pointed out to my wife, and then I was wrong on it, but I thought about it more and reconfigured my opinion. For a little while there, I was like, it seems like the nun always has tons of space over her head.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's because, like, she think like everything's above her head.
You could go that. At. You could go with like there's that's the room for God in the film. Like you can make that symbolic interpretation. Yeah,
I thought about that too. But then when I was watching it further, it was the same deal with the lawyer. And I think it was whenever they were in a situation, or lawyer, I mean a judge. But I think it was whenever they were in a situation that they weren't sure of the answers, they would film it that way. I think.
Yeah.
I would have to rewatch it to be sure. But once I came up with that theory, it seemed to play out. But yeah, I mean, like the way stuff's framed is crazy.
And the shadow works. Like there's a moment where I really thought I caught the first shadow mistake because there's a shadow towards the end of the movie that crosses over her face. And then you see that it's a car coming towards you. Like, goddamn, even that's on purpose. Like and it's only 88 minutes. It's a pretty, pretty tight movie.
Dude, I got to say, and I'm a it's not even 88 minutes, dude. It's
it's with credits. It's
83 88. Minutes.
Yeah, it's 88 dude. With credits.
No.
Oh, really? Because our cut was 88. I can tell you for an absolute fact, our cut was 88 minutes.
The cut I saw was 83, and I was so happy. I was so happy because I'm like, it's 7 minutes under a full movie.
Yep.
Like, because I have been watching so many 3 hour movies that I'm just like, oh, thank God there's like an easy one.
And it really is tight and everything feels planned and on purpose. Like you can tell that this was mapped out by Pawlikowski.
But we haven't even talked about
The plot.
About.
No. Yeah. So essentially it follows Ida, who is right about to become a full on nun. She's about to take her vows. And she learns some things that spur her on a journey of self-discovery, trying to learn about her origins and her
family.
She's
forced, though.
She is forced.
She is kicked out by her
convent. Yeah, she is booted out.
And told that she has to talk to her only living relative.
Her aunt, yeah.
Yep, as long as it takes. And they don't even tell her what the end game is, just as long as it takes. Yeah,
because Ida, it's worth noting, has spent her entire life in this convent.
Yeah, she was an orphan and grew up in there. And it's because her family was Jewish, and as she soon learns, they were killed in the Holocaust.
Yes.
This movie takes place in the 60s.
Yes.
I actually had to go to the internet to figure that out. Like, me and my wife both triangulated it around the 60s,
but
just based off of her age, but we didn't know. We had to actually, I had to look it up on IMDb to be sure. And the fact that they're listening to John Coltrane a lot kind of fed me to that as well, but... Yeah, so it takes place in the 60s, and so they're basically, she finds out that A, she was Jewish, B, her family was killed in the Holocaust, and C, they don't know where the bodies are.
Yes.
And so she wants to kind of, I guess, put it to rest, and so she needs to find the bodies to put it to rest, and that just opens up a whole can of worms.
Yeah, a whole can of worms.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, a lot of the stuff that happened in Europe, it's not always the Nazis doing stuff. Like, they'd set up a system where the ordinary people would do stuff, you know, for various gains. In this particular case, there was some people who made the gain from taking their property because they were Jewish. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's
I think in the end, I won't say who the killer was because that gives away a little bit, but... In the end, they couldn't bring themselves to kill her because she was a baby and she wasn't a boy. Like, they killed the baby boy because he was circumcised, but they couldn't identify her as Jewish, so that's how she got to the orphanage. But it's a really interesting look. It's filmed beautifully.
It's gorgeous. It is it's like stunning in 4:3.
It's in 4:3, so it's like it looks like an old school TV set, and it's in black and white, but it's done really well. Like I could see the case if the people voting for the cinematography award were like, we want to go with something classic.
Yeah, and if this is a deserving winner if they did.
Yeah, I still think it's going to go to Birdman.
Agreed.
Or what's the other one? the Wes Anderson one. Oh, Grand Budapest Hotel. Yeah.
Which is,
I'm leaning towards Grand Budapest Hotel, but I still want to watch the race a little bit.
Yeah, and this is a good field too.
Yeah. When is the Oscars anyway?
February 27th. So I'm pretty sure. No, it's that Sunday, so it'd be like the 29th maybe.
Are you getting, do you know for sure if you're getting ballots for the Myrna Loy?
Yeah, I will be making those this week.
Right. We should fill out another one for Montauk Disguise.
Absolutely.
We should do it the week before the Oscars. Definitely. Though.
And that'll be helpful because we'll be opening Still Alice that week.
Which I saw.
Oh, good. Well, there you go.
Yeah, might as well jump into that one.
I can't until I see it because we're opening it the week before.
Oh, so am I supposed to review this for the Thin Men?
Well, I thought we would eventually when it came. Yeah.
I'm going to put a pin in that one.
Okay, cool.
I went down to another city and saw that one. I'll just leave it at that. Don't look into it too hard. I just went somewhere. I don't want to talk about the trip.
That's right. Anyway, it was a bad trip. Boring trip.
That's right. Anyway, Julianne Moore totally deserves the Oscar. I'll say that off of what I've seen so far, I think I've seen all the best actress performances now. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also saw Wild, which I guess I'll talk about now.
Hit it.
So Reese Witherspoon plays a lady who has...
Cheryl Strayed's her name, right?
Yes, who's a real life person.
Mm-hmm.
And she winds up going on basically a hike that lasts for, God, what is it, 3 months, I think? And she's basically trying to figure out stuff in her life. She's got a very chaotic life.
Mm-hmm.
And the crux of her... At first, it seems like it's more her marriage that dissolved as a reason why she's going on the hike. But then you find out it's more that she hasn't resolved issues with her mother, played by Laura Dern, in a lot of flashbacks, who's up for Best Supporting Actress. I should add Reese Witherspoon is up for Best Actress. It's a pretty good movie. It's pretty good. And I gotta say, they asked Reese Witherspoon to do a lot of things I didn't think she was capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she won that, did she win the last Oscar? I can't remember. When she was nominated for Walk the Line, I was like, that's fucking bullshit. Remember.
But I do, I have a lot of love for Reese Witherspoon.
I've loved her in some stuff, but I never really thought she was a great actress. I watched this and I'm like, she's a great actress.
Yeah,
like,
she's really, really talented.
And it's weird because I haven't seen her in something for a while. So like, it's weird to see she kind of grew out of her like awkward chin and like, I don't know. I just haven't seen her since like 2003 or something.
Oh, wow.
So whenever Walk the Line was, I haven't seen her in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Since
so like 05, so, probably 10 years ago then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I haven't seen a newer movie since then that she's been. And so, yeah, it was kind of strange to see how much she's grown up, I guess, in a way. She's naked a lot in this movie too, but it's a lot of like quick flashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, way to go, Reese Witherspoon.
And she's in Inherent Vice as well, which I'm still super excited.
Oh, she is.
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait to see that. That one's definitely on my list.
I know. I'm really excited for that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that one's good. I will say, however, this whole thing of the actress who played Coretta Scott King from Selma not being nominated. Now that I've seen Wild, I'm calling horseshit that she wasn't nominated. Because Laura Dern does not deserve a nomination for this movie. I'm sorry, dude. Laura Dern is not asked to do a whole lot in this movie. She's just a mother who's like happy 1 second and then flashes of sad the next. And that's it. That's all she is just like this little teeny tiny part of the film. And there's at no point I was watching it that I wasn't like, this is Laura Dern. Like I watched it actively thinking this is Laura Dern. Like I didn't see anything in her performance that I thought was Oscar nomination potential. Keira Knightley and Laura Dern over this actress. It's shameful. It has gone to shameful level. One person may be forgivable, two, it's not forgivable, dude. They fucking shafted her, and I'm getting on my high horse about that now.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I can tell.
I just had to say that, because Laura Dern's not bad. She's not that fucking good either. All right, I said it.
Yeah, you just got to remember, I've now heard this rant like 9 times. So.
Yeah, but this time I saw another one. I got another actress to throw in the fire. Damn.
You're going to find another to throw into the bus, too.
I think, I don't know. There's one other supporting actress, I think. So the one from 2 Days, 1 Night, right?
Marion Cotillard.
Yeah. Was she up for supporting actress?
I can't remember.
Yeah, whatever.
Again,
she's
yeah, I'm like super deep in beer, so I'm so proud I pulled off those Polish that's names. Like good. I'm done. Like that's pretty good. That's dude. My high water mark for the night.
Oh, and then the last movie I saw was Unbreakable.
Unbroken.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Unbroken.
Unbreakable.
I also
a very
saw Unbreakable,
movie.
And I really enjoyed Unbreakable. Unbroken was, how can I put this? The story is absolutely amazing. The movie is not executed that well. I don't know what else to say about it. I don't want to give it that much time.
Yeah.
It's not that great. Sorry.
I'll throw out a little one that I saw.
It's faithful, but it's not that great.
I'll throw out one that I saw months ago when we had it at the Myrna. It's in the Best Documentary nominees, Finding Vivian Maier. And people should go see that movie. It's this amazing story about this maid who lived in New York and Chicago and bounced around a couple other major cities. And she took all these photographs like of street life in all these cities. And she would take pictures of the type of subjects who didn't get photographed in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And she really captured like the whole spectrum of life in these major cities in that time. And her entire work was just boxed away, right? And it would have been so easy for this work to be lost. But this guy, whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, he found it at an auction and found like thousands of her photos and ended up dedicating himself to collecting all of her work. And he used it to create this documentary about her. And they're stunning photographs, first of all. Like she's an amazing photographer. She had an incredible eye. But when you sort of see the story of someone who so easily could have been lost to history, finding their moment and finally being like respected as the artist they were, it's a really cool story, and it's worth it just to see the photographs. Like they really are stunning photographs.
Okay, so let me just recap my week really quick. So I saw Ida, which is about the Holocaust. I saw Unbroken, which is about a dude who gets shot down by the Japanese after he wins a gold medal and then gets shot at a bunch and then almost eaten by sharks
and then the
and
movie.
Then thrown in a German
and then tortured
Japanese,
forever.
Like, yeah.
And then the movie ends.
Forever. Right. Then I saw, what else did I say?
Wild.
Which is about a woman coping with her mother's death.
And trying to survive in the wilderness.
I saw Still Alice, which is about a woman who is 50 and winds up getting Alzheimer's early. And there's no happy ending there, by the way. Spoiler, I guess, if you don't know anything about Alzheimer's. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, they're not going to find a magical cure in that movie.
Dude, I was so goddamn depressed this week, man. Rough. I can't even, I was telling my wife, this is such a great year for movies, but they're all goddamn depressing. Like, of all the movies that were nominated for an Oscar, I feel like one of the only ones that I saw that didn't depress or that was the least depressing was Interstellar. And that shit still made all of us cry, dude. Chris Nolan should not be, the thing you hold up is I was at least depressed at this movie.
Yeah. It's like when Whiplash is the closest thing to a happy ending you get. That's a real problem.
Yeah, no, dude. It's this is like
a bummer year.
This is like the Oscar year that should have happened in 1994. I'm just saying, man, when you had Nirvana was on top of the charts and then Cobain committed suicide, this should have been that Oscar year. Why are we getting it in 2015? We got a sniper who gets PTSD and gets killed in a car. Mm-hmm. We got a civil rights leader who gets slain, although not in the movie, but damn, that shit hangs over the entire movie. We got Whiplash about a kid who's loves to be beaten by his teacher, essentially. It's like Secretary, but with jazz music.
Yeah. We've got Birdman, which...
Sorry, I should crack myself up at that. Yeah, we got Birdman,
which
he may or may not...
he shoots himself in the face.
Yeah. And he may or may not have committed suicide. Yeah. We don't even know. That's the happy ending. They don't spell it out for you.
And we've got a Foxcatcher, which is almost 3 hours of building up to a murder.
It totally is, dude.
It's just a real bummer.
We got the Grand Budapest Hotel, the first Wes Anderson movie where it's not a happy ending. You know what I mean? Like, usually they learn something and, like, they're happy at the end. No.
Nothing.
Nope.
Not in
even the theory of everything, which is the closest thing to a happy ending.
It's about a dude who fucking gets Lou Gehrig's disease.
And then the happy ending. And then divorces his wife.
Yep.
Yeah, the happy ending for him is that he gets a computer that lets him talk. That's his happy ending, dude. Yeah, I still need a caregiver, but
I can talk
again.
At least
I got divorced.
Oh, man.
What a fucking year, man.
No shit.
No wonder the Lego movie didn't make it.
Dude. Yeah, it was
that's
way
that's
too
what
perky.
Has to be it.
It doesn't fit the mold. If they had ended with, like, Will Ferrell, like, beating his child at the
falling
end.
Down,
like,
the stairs.
Yeah, pushing his kid down the stairs. It totally could have been up for Best Animated.
Wow. Well, let's talk about a more lighthearted movie.
So
by the way, Big Hero 6 might win. You know why? Because his fucking older brother dies at the beginning of the movie. I'm sorry, go ahead. What'd you watch?
So I finally saw The Interview, because it's streaming on Netflix now.
For free. Yeah. I wish I hadn't paid $6 for it, but it was worth it.
Yep. I regret nothing.
It was fun. My wife slept through most of it, but I enjoyed it.
Me and my wife laughed through all of it. More towards the second half than the first
half. Yeah, the second half is where it really kicks in.
When they get to Korea on, it's really funny. The whole honey dick thing.
That's such a Boromir thing to say.
Like, James Franco, I was just like tolerating him in the first half of the movie. He's legitimately funny in the second half. He's funnier than Seth Rogen in the second half. And there's things that don't even belong in that movie that still made me laugh. Like when he gets his fingers bit off.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? That's fucked up, dude. Like, his fingers
just
gone.
Got bitten off. Yeah.
But it kind of makes me laugh because it's so ridiculous that it even happened. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
That was fun.
Randall Park gives a tour de force as Kim Jong-il.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good. Oh, and I found out why Dennis Rodman didn't do a cameo. He just said a little bit ago that he thought that he thought The Interview was sophomoric.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Dennis Rodman, you think this movie is sophomoric? That's interesting. That's real interesting.
Thanks, star of The Celebrity Mole.
Thank you, man whose cover had him naked on a motorcycle.
Oh, you just don't understand good art. That's not sophomoric at all.
I would say that, like, Mary and Carmen Electra twice. Kind of sophomore.
He didn't learn
playing
the lesson
basketball
the first time.
In a wedding dress.
Yeah. Well, he's a cross-dresser. That's okay. That was the interesting thing from the Hall of Fame speech that he gave. That okay, so here's... This is one thing I'll say a little more serious about Dennis Rodman. Because of his pattern of behavior of, like, grabbing bizarre headlines all the time, I really thought the cross-dressing thing was just something he did for attention. When he did his Hall of Fame speech, he seemed touched, and he basically said that they would honor a cross-dresser and the thing, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I never realized that's actually who he was. I didn't know, like, because he was so fucking
crazy. Yeah, because it just seems like one more insane thing he's doing.
Which makes sense when I think about it now, that he shadows all this, like, the cross-dressing with all this other crazy stuff so that people just accept it. They're like, yeah, it's Dennis
Rodman. That's just what Dennis... I'm so sad that he didn't get to play the peak of his career in, like, this top internet era we're in now. Can you imagine Dennis Rodman playing at his peak in 2014?
Weirdly enough, I think that he would be less popular in this era because we're such an angrier society.
Oh, for sure.
Than
then. But he'd be in the headlines all the time.
Well,
even more than now, because there'd be so even the tiniest little things would get picked up.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. But what I'm saying is what happens is you get this negative wave of like, fuck that. And then Fox News starts to like hammer on him. And then you get this whole class of people that are anti-Dennis Rodman. That shit didn't happen in the 90s. It really didn't. Like, people just laughed at it. And they're like, that's Dennis Rodman. I don't think you can have that playful kind of thing in today's internet. Like, I just don't think
it doesn't feel like it happens anymore.
Yeah, they don't allow for it anymore. Like, people will pick it apart and they'll blog about it and it'll become a big deal and people will get upset. It's like getting upset that somebody didn't get nominated for a silly award when they do a great fucking movie. Like, we should only care about the movie, right? But instead we're haggling about the award. That's me, dude. I recognize it. I'm part of the problem. I can see it. Why can't you?
Because I am, again, many beers in.
I keep forgetting this for some reason.
I know I'm keeping myself pretty composed right now, but my head is in another universe. I'm living in a parallel dimension to you two.
Fair enough.
Oh, what could have been last year? What could have been? I was about that deep, but it was on the negative end.
Yeah, you had a very different tail end of your experience than me.
I'm sure we talked about this on the show, but Brandon came, like, that was when we were recording in the basement at my old place, and Brandon fell down the stairs coming to the podcast.
Oh.
And you didn't even seem to mind when you dusted yourself off. Dude, you took like 7 stairs down.
And they were concrete stairs. They were not.
They were just covered with carpet. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not soft wood. I woke up with some bruises, but I had enough beer that the pain tolerance was gone.
It's so funny the way we process this shit, too. We didn't actually get to see Zach's reaction because it was the same year, but you didn't come onto the podcast till the summer after. Uh-huh. I checked too, by the way, because we talked about that a little while ago when your first episode was the one after we talked about the Avengers.
Right.
It was an episode called Acid is a Painkiller.
There you go.
So this is where we learned like that Adrian tells his big long story about doing acid and running through a campfire and then just standing in the campfire and getting third degree burns. Because acid's a painkiller.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, so we didn't get to see your reaction, but I know Brandon's was to fall down the stairs drunkenly. Mine was to be drunk and not say a word, like, until the podcast started. I was so mad. Like, my wife was, like, handling me with kid gloves, and I walked downstairs, and before you guys came in, like, I literally went into, like, the other room and just beat like a wall. Like, I just beat a wall with my bare hands and then just got it out and then sat over it like, in the podcast. I was so mad.
I remember
it would have been fine if they got blown out. Like, it would have been fine, but the fact that they came so close and then lost it, furious, man. Yeah.
I remember if I had been on the podcast after that 2011 season Super Bowl, I wouldn't have showed up. First of all, because what I did is I had a few friends in my apartment. I just left. I just rage quit and left. I was silent. I did not say anything. I just went away.
I didn't really want to watch the podcast or the podcast, the Super Bowl with anybody. I really did not want to watch the Super Bowl with anybody. When my team's playing, it's very much a solitary thing for me in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want people around because I just like, I take it so bad when they lose.
Yeah.
And I'm excited when they win, like embarrassingly excited. So like, I'd just rather not have a
I
lot
learned
of
a lesson
around.
After that Super Bowl. I will only watch with other Pats fans if the Pats are in it.
Yeah.
I cannot be around people who aren't in my corner.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's not like anybody was rooting against the Niners at that party, where at least openly, because we're at my dad's Super Bowl party and I don't feel like there was a vibe. Like I don't think if there's anybody pulling for the Ravens, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I was very upset.
I had the kind of friends at the time who would root against my team just to make me upset.
Yeah.
Which is like the wrong kind of friends.
That's a rough place to be.
Yeah.
Those aren't necessarily friends.
Although, to be fair, I remember the last time the Broncos won the Super Bowl, I was with... No, it was the second... When they won their first Super Bowl against Green Bay,
I was that right.
No, that was in college.
Okay, well, I watched the second one with you, I think.
No, that was in my apartment. I pretty much watched that one alone.
Okay,
but the first one, I was the only Bronco fan in a sea of Packers fans, and it felt so good. It's not so like if you have an entire room like that are winning and like. That's a bad place to be, but when you're the one winning out of everybody, that is a great place to be.
Well, I know I told this, at least I'm Put Dirt on It before, but I became a 49er fan. It was after it was like 90-91, like 90 regular season, 91 playoffs, right? So they were going for a third straight Super Bowl when I started watching football. I'd already like decided that I liked them when I was younger, but I didn't watch any games. That was the first season I'll actually claim as a fan. And at the in the conference game against the Giants, fucking Joe Montana got knocked out and Steve Young came in like completely unprepared to take over. And so that was the first season I watched. So I went through a couple of years without a Super Bowl. And then so when Steve Young won it, it was at Brandon's house. And I remember I had bought this 49er like fucking bubble bath. It was this bubble bath that had a big football helmet on it, like a 49er football helmet on it. And I said that I wouldn't open it until they won a Super Bowl, which I was young. I just expected it to happen.
Yeah.
And it happened to, but I mean, like, you know, when
that
you
could have gone wrong, you just should be happy you're not a Lions fan.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'm going to open it when they win a Super Bowl. And so I waited, I want to say it was like 4 years or something. Well,
no, okay. It wasn't that
94
long.
To 95. Yeah, it was 4 years.
All right.
So I waited 4 years before I opened that thing. And I was sitting on Brandon's couch. We're watching The Basement, and they won. I just got excited, and I fucking put my hand over it and just shook it it was champagne and just covered everybody with shampoo.
Oh, my God.
Which I didn't even think about. I just thought it was hilarious at the time. But
that, and I had that couch, like, all the way through college, and it was still had shampoo on it in places.
That's because shampoo is better.
Like, I like taking like rug doctors and like steam cleaned it. There still was shampoo on that when
you
it went.
Did not. You took it to a rug doctor, really?
Yeah, because I lived in apartments where
a college kid took it to a rug doctor.
Well, you got to clean out your apartment, so you might as well clean the couch while you're at it.
Oh, I see. It was like it's going to cost you the same thing, kind of thing.
The rug doctor. You know, you go in the grocery store and the corner there's a little carpet shampooer.
Oh, I thought this was like a place called the rug doctor. I was like, there's no way that a college kid paid to get your your couch clean. Now I understand.
Now it all comes
you
together.
You bought something to clean your couch. Okay,
no, I rented sense. Something.
Okay, all right,
but yeah, still
sorry about that. That's what I was getting at.
Although when I started college, I came across a small little bottle of Crown Royal. It was bigger than a pocket rocket, but smaller than the pint size. I don't know, it was about the size of your fist sort of size.
Like airplane bottle of booze?
Yeah, size. Some that sort of thing. Like, not just the little mini bottles you see, but
right,
bigger than that. And I saved that for when the Broncos won, and thank God they won that first year. That bottle looked really tempting once or twice.
I have a pocket rocket of vodka from the Soviet Union. From the Soviet Union.
Nice.
My dad gave it to me. I think he just gave it to me when I was like, and I want to say I was 21. I was probably 21 when he gave it to me. And I put it on the shelf. But, dude, I don't know how it's lasted this long. I really don't. Like, all the nights that I'd, like, get drunk and start to look at that, like, I could use one more drink. Or all the roommates who would look at that, like, I could use a drink. Like, I don't know how the fuck it lasted. With the lifestyle I've led, all my friends have led, I don't know how that Russian vodka is still around. It's amazing. And I don't know if I'm ever going to open it. It couldn't be good at this point, right?
No, there's
like
no
I don't
way.
Know what happens with vodka, but it couldn't taste good.
I know what happens with a lot of those pocket rockets because my dad collects pocket rockets.
Yeah, he does. Dude, your dad's got tons of them.
He's got like a small shelf about 3 feet tall, foot and a half wide, about four shelves, completely full of pocket rockets. Like some are date back to the 40s, like legitimately collects them. And most of them. since about 1995 went to a different seal, and it will actually evaporate stuff out of it. So,
oh, weird.
Well, this is definitely pre 95 because the Soviet Union was no longer there. Like, was it 89 that the Soviet
about 91 because it was pre. It was before 92 Olympics when...
Yeah.
It
was definitely before that.
Because 89 is Berlin Wall, right?
That's what I thought.
And then the Soviet Union falls in like 90 or 91.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Then Czechoslovakia breaks in 93.
I think it's like late 90 or something.
Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania broke off in 92.
Yeah, like all those countries start breaking in 92, 93.
Because they were at the 92 Olympics. Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, I think we got.
I think we worked out this timeline. Now, again, I'm super drunk. I might be thinking of my dimension Soviet Union, which could be very different from yours.
Do you believe in your memory?
Zach hasn't been around for the Soviet Union, really.
Nope.
When you think about it.
Nope. But I hate him like I was. Because I got raised on all those 80s anti-Soviet action movies and like the Miracle on Ice and all that. So all of it has like been built
Red
into
Dawn.
Me.
Well, and I just had a conversation with my 13-year-old today, and I had mentioned something about the Soviet Union, and I was like, well, people were really scared when we were kids. Like, we really thought we were going to die from nuclear missiles. And she just laughed like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, no, really, River, like,
That was a legitimate fear.
I was like, there was missiles pointed at us, and we knew they were pointed at us, and there were missiles that we had pointed at them, and we knew they were at them, and if we ever went into a real war, those missiles were probably getting launched.
Mm.
Like, it seemed like such a foreign concept to her, and it made me feel really good that it was such a foreign concept to her, because it was not a fun time to grow up.
No, and living here in Helena when we did... growing up later parts of growing up here in Helena, and we are only about 90 miles from a major Soviet Union target.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being Great Falls and the Minuteman missiles silos.
Yep.
So it was a legitimate fear.
Yeah. Well, and I was on the coast. I mean, that's they totally would have come for the coast.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly. Yeah, it wasn't a fun time to grow up, and I remember they would have us do the stupid shit where you get under your desk if there is a nuclear war.
Yeah.
Like, they have a funny sketch in Mr. Show with the apocalypse drill. They get under their desks, and, like, there's a mushroom cloud, and, like... But that's what they showed us, dude. Yeah. That's really, like, oh, well, you just get under your desk. Yeah, it'll be fine.
Let me tell you, when I was going to school, they still use the get under your desk trick for basically any sort of emergency that could ever happen.
Well,
all of them.
It makes sense for some things. Like an earthquake, if you get like ceilings that collapse or whatever, like the desk is going to protect you. There's a lot of things like that. But
there's a lot of things that's not going to do shit for you.
Yeah.
Fires, nuclear blasts.
Yeah. Nuclear war is absolutely ridiculous because you're getting eviscerated if you're in the like the radius of where a nuclear missile would affect you, you're fucked, dude. You're either dying in the blast radius, or you're gonna die later from the radiation. Like, there's no in between on that.
Yeah,
that's gonna help and shit.
Yep.
Bomb shelters might have helped.
But those would have done some good.
Thank God for bomb shelters. How many TV shows would we have lost out on where somebody like hides in a bomb shelter and they get stuck for 30 years and they come out in an apocalyptic wasteland? Thank God for the bomb shelter. Do you remember that? Wasn't there like an Alicia Silverstone movie where Brendan Fraser like winds up in a bomb shelter? See, you can tell what era this is because of the names that I'm pulling out. Yeah, like Brendan Fraser's family winds up going in a bomb shelter.
And wasn't that like Christopher Walken played the dad or...
Yeah, yep. Like, so they go in a bomb shelter in the early 60s and they think, because they think that nuclear war started, I think it was during the Cuban Missile Crisis. So they get in the bomb shelter and they seal the hatch, and then later on they have a Brendan Fraser pops out of her vag. And so he grows up in the bomb shelter and he's still living like it's the 50s and 60s and comes out. and Dave Foley's in it. Yeah, it was not a great movie. But there's a lot of movies like that growing up where it's just like somebody hid in a bomb shelter and, hey, now we can live.
Yay, bomb shelters.
I remember the Catalyst because it was during the Cuban Missile Crisis. They were living in Miami and there was a plane that flew over and like crashed into the house just like randomly.
Oh, yeah.
So they thought that was the big one.
We had a plane crash into Helena a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, we did.
That was insane. I got to ask if anybody read up on this because I don't really read local news that often.
I did a base amount of reading, but I'm in no position to pull it out of my head.
How about you, Brent?
All I know is the lady whose house, like it landed in their backyard or something like that. She's like, please stop, like. There's a Helena Classifieds, like a local trade them. Well, she's like, please, please stop coming to my house and looking around and tramping through my backyard. Please.
Yeah, Matt Campbell was talking about that because he had read it on the Helena Classifieds. He's living in Bozeman right now. But he had read that and he was talking about he didn't know if it was true or not, but there's a rumor that the guy who crashed the plane had bought the plane from the people whose house it crashed into. But just like, that can't be a coincidence if that's true, right? Like,
there's something going on there.
Yeah. It has to be.
Yeah, something was going on. There was some sort of shady deal, like, oh, you're going to sell me a shitty plane, huh? Guess where I'm going to land it? Oh, I could reach the airstrip or I could reach your house.
We'll see where I run out of fuel first. Yeah.
As I circle around
Ripper
your house.
Like a vulture.
So, right. Has anybody else seen the season 6 promo or the
Game
special?
Of Thrones?
No, for the Venture Brothers.
Oh, no.
The season 6 special. No. It was about an hour and a half long. This and Gargantua 2.
Nope.
Nope.
How is it?
Tell us about it.
It was fantastic. Like, everything you could hope for in a Venture Brothers mini movie happens. People die. There's major characters that are getting killed off. Like, just wonderful. Wonderful.
Is a Monarch in it?
Yep.
Hey. He's my favorite character in the Venture Brothers. I just love the Monarch. I always love a bumbling villain.
Of course. Bumbling villains are great.
Especially if they have, like, pencil-thin mustaches.
Oh, that they can twirl.
And really long eyebrows.
Snidely Whiplash, shout out to you.
Or they have a wife named Dr. Girlfriend. Who sounds like a man.
Hello, sweetie.
I can't even do it.
This is fantastic.
That's not good either.
No. Not good.
All right, I'm going to end this because when we start doing subpar versions,
that's when it's time to check out.
That's when it's time to check out.
Thank you, New England.
You totally didn't respect the outro.
Not at all. Not today. Hey, man. Thanks for coming out to meet me. I've just been so down lately.
No problem, man. What's the matter?
It's so hard to talk about. My batting average isn't quite what it used to be.
Your batting average?
My drive shaft doesn't have the kind of torque I'm looking for, if you catch my drift.
So you're feeling some depression from your erectile dysfunction?
Some? I'm only feeling depression from my erectile dysfunction.
You know, something that helps me is the Not Safe for Network.
The Not Safe for Network? What's that?
Not safe for network.
Side effects include rule birds, best available, you have a good life, monster of the skies, box office battle within men, and shooting the show. Do not take Not Safe for Network if you're on Cialis, Viagra, on Legend, or Comedy Central commercials at 4 a.m.
Not safe for network.
Wow, my whole world is new. Thanks, Not Safe for Network.
Not Safe for Network, putting the function back in erectile dysfunction.
Not safe for network.